Well, in just a few short hours, I had knocked out several pieces of work. Not only had I notched up a moral victory over Pete, but I had solved the case of the moving garden. Your ordinary run-of-ranch dog would have gone back to bed, figuring he had already put in a day's work. But me? No, sir. Even though I had stayed up half the night sifting clues, it never occurred to me to go back to bed. All right, maybe it occurred to me, but iron discipline prevailed. I laid low in the sick pen while Sally Mae rumbled over her tomato plants and tried to keep little Alfred from wandering down to the creek. When I heard the slap-slap of her rubber thongs against her feet, I peeked out and saw her walking back to the house. The coast was clear, and I made a dash for the sewer. This was the spot where the septic tank overflowed, don't you see? It held the magic green waters that healed the sick and impressed the women. Not that I was particularly sick or planning to sweep any women off their feet, but while we're on the subject of women, it had been a while since I had seen the lovely Miss Beulah. Oh, be still, my heart. She had visited my gunny sack many times at night, a scented phantom in my dreams that troubled my sleep and left me calling her name in the darkness. Couldn't get that woman off my mind. Why she wasted her time with Plato the bird dog, I just didn't know. Imagine the torment that must have caused her. Anyway, where was I? Sewer. A regular course of mineral baths was part of my overall fitness program, and I tried not to think of Beulah during working hours. I climbed out of the sewer, gave myself a good shake, and headed down to the creek to study the scene of the murder one more time. That case had me stumped. I had reached a dead end. I hoped I might find some little piece of evidence I had missed the first time. If I had found a new piece of evidence, it would have been little. There just wasn't much left of the victim. Maybe a double handful of feathers, four or five toenails, and a beak. I tried to put the clues together in a pattern and build a profile of the murderer. He had a taste for young, plump chickens, but obviously he didn't care for beaks, toenails, or feathers. Not much of a profile there. That description fit a wide range of characters, including, well, me. I was no fiend, you understand, but no fool either. In the unlikely event that I had decided to break the law and eat a young, plump chicken, I would have devoured everything but toenails, feathers, and the beak. There's no chance that I would have risked my career for the momentary delight of eating a young, plump, tender, juicy chicken. But if I had, and I repeat, this is strictly a hypothetical example, I would have left the aforementioned parts. So I was back to point zero. I checked for tracks, but found only mine and Drover's, and a few smudged prints that I couldn't identify. Maybe the killer had smudged feet. Then again, maybe he didn't. I was in deep thought, following each lead until it vanished into thin air, when something strange occurred. I sort of passed out, fainted. Nothing like that had ever happened to me before. One minute I was sitting there beside the creek, and the next thing I knew, I woke up near some willows, maybe 50 feet downstream. It kind of scared me, to be honest about it. I knew I'd been working hard, staying up late at night, burning the flashlight at both ends, you might say, but I hadn't realized that it had taken such a toll on my body. I mean, to some of us, overwork is just a normal condition. You get used to a grinding schedule, sacrificing everything for the ranch, giving up your private life for something you believe in, and you just don't notice that it's chipping away at your physical and psychomechanical whatever. This is especially true, I might point out, when a guy starts out with a rather magnificent array of physical gifts. Eyes that see in the dark, ears that can hear a prairie dog in its hole, a heart that pumps blood 24 hours a day, rain or shine, and finally, an overall body that causes monsters to shrink in fear and women to faint. But what our guy tends to forget is the joker in the deck of life. Time. Time not only marches on, it marches right over the top of a guy, steps on his nose and tail, and leaves boot prints up and down his back. Maybe the years were catching up with me. Maybe I'd been pushing myself too hard. Maybe all the cares and worries of running the ranch had begun to grind me down. Maybe I had hardening of the asteroids, or high blood pressure, or low blood pressure, or terminal rutabaga. I had seen other dogs go down with those afflictions. Maybe it was my turn. Maybe after a long and glorious career in security work, I had finally burned myself out. I was in the midst of these depressing thoughts when Drover came streaking down from the corrals. He was yip-yip-yipping and obviously in a state of excitement, if not sheer panic.
Hank! Oh, Hank! They're back! Come quick! Mayday! Help! Blood! Murder!
There are no holidays at the top. I pushed myself up to face the latest crisis on the ranch. Drover was there in front of me, jumping up and down and squeaking. Drover, please don't squeak.
Okay, Hank, but...
And quit hopping up and down. Hold still and try to get control of yourself. He quit hopping and squeaking, which helped a bunch. Now, I don't expect you to care that I'm showing early symptoms of terminal rutabaga, but you might as well know about it now.
What is it?
It's a rare and dreaded disease. One minute you feel great. The next, bingo, you're down with one foot in the grave.
Well, that still leaves you with three.
I gave him my most patient glare. That's true, Drover, and I'm touched by your concern. It's times like these that make a guy appreciate all the wonderful friends he doesn't have.
That's what friends are for.
Yes, I know. And what I wouldn't give to have just one.
Oh, you've won plenty, Hank, but you can't win them all.
That may be the smartest thing you ever said, Drover.
Thanks.
And it's complete nonsense. Now, tell me why you came down here. Slowly, calmly, and without your usual hysterics. His eyes blanked out.
Let's see. Why did I come down here?
You were excited about something. You were yipping and hopping.
Must have been pretty important.
Are you telling me you've forgotten?
Heck no! You might get mad.
Something about blood.
Blood?
And murder.
Murder? Sounds awful. Sure wish I could... Oh, Hank, blood and murder, they're back on the ranch.
I poked him in the chest with my paw. Who's back on the ranch? Spit it out. You're burning daylight.
The killers! They struck again in broad daylight.
Huh? You mean there's been another murder?
Yes. Oh, it's awful and I'm scared.
Well, that bit of news sent a shock clean out to the end of my tail. Never mind that I was on death's front porch. I had to get cracking again and protect the ranch. I went streaking up the hill. Come on, Drover, follow me!
Do you know where you're going?
I stopped and waited for him to catch up. Drover, you neglected to mention one small piece of information. Where are we going?
Well, let's see. You know, I can't remember.
Oh, for crying out loud!
Wait a minute. I've got it. Behind the machine shed.
I went tearing up the hill. Me in the lead and Drover bringing up the rear. In the middle of those dead weeds behind the machine shed, 5 paces east of the one-way plow, I found the evidence. And I was astonished at how little evidence there was. Nothing but three white feathers. Holy cats, Drover! The killers not only ate all the meat and bones this time, they ate the beak and toenails and most of the feathers. And there's no blood whatsoever. He came up and looked at the scene.
Kinda scary, isn't it?
It certainly is, but I'm beginning to see a pattern in these killings.
Yeah, and there's even a better pattern over here where the chicken got killed.
Huh? He moved 6 paces to the east and stood over a familiar sight. A double handful of feathers, toenails, a beak, and bloodstains in the dirt. I joined him. Yes, I see what you mean. This pattern is better. And what's more important, it matches the M.O. of last night's killing. I started pawing up dirt and throwing it on the feathers, etc.
Hey, be careful! You're covering up the evidence!
I finished the job and turned to Drover. Of course I was covering the evidence. And I suppose I have to explain why.
Might be a good idea.
Very well. Listen carefully. I tossed a glance over both shoulders and lowered my voice. We have studied the evidence and found a pattern, right? What's to keep the killer from coming back, studying the same evidence, and discovering the same pattern? And then using it. Had you thought of that?
Not really.
Well, there you are. We can't allow our evidence to be used to encourage criminal behavior. And furthermore, if Loper and Sally Mae find out they've lost 2 pullets in 2 days, they're liable to think we're not doing our jobs.
Never thought of that.
Which might contain a germ of truth. And I don't need to tell you how dangerous germs can be. Drover is so predictable. He sneezed. There, you see? Through a process of simple deduction, we've proved my original point. For now, the best thing we can do is forget we ever saw this evidence and try to build up our resistance to germs. And with that, I put the case of the vanishing chickens on temporary hold.